Hello and welcome to the third and final episode in the case of the Cranstons. In episodes 1 and 2, we delve deeper into Jordan's deterioration, his upbringing, and the family members who were responsible. If you haven't listened to those yet, do make sure to do so. You can find them in the same place you found this episode, on iTunes and Acast. But for this final edition in the Case of the Cranstons trilogy, I'm joined by Leeds Live reporters Nathan Hyde and Stephanie Finnegan, and this time round we take a close look at the prison sentences given to the three women who were held responsible for Jordan Burling's horrific death, the reasons why the judge did not lock them up for longer, and the decision to launch a full, independent and joint review into how Jordan's circumstances were not picked up by the authorities. Just before we start, we'd like to warn you that this episode may contain details that some may find distressing. I'm joined by Stephanie and Nathan for the third and final episode in the case of the Cranstons, and we'll start today's episode by looking at the prison sentences that were handed out. So Nathan, how long have each of the women been locked up for?
So Dawn Cranston, Jordan's mother, has been jailed for 4 years for manslaughter. She was also jailed for 12 months for concealing the birth of a child. Those sentences will run concurrently, so she will serve a total of 4 years. Denise Cranston, Jordan's grandmother, has been sentenced to 3 years imprisonment for manslaughter. And Abigail Burling, who's Jordan's sister, was sentenced to 18 months imprisonment for the lesser charge of allowing or causing the death of a vulnerable adult. Although the judge did say that they will serve half of those sentences in prison and then the rest on licence.
Now, before we hear what the judge had to say in that sentencing, let's listen to the reaction from Jordan's family and from West Yorkshire Police.
I'm the senior investigating officer for this case. Jordan Burling died a few days before his 19th birthday. His death was an absolute tragedy given the circumstances in which it occurred and the fact that it could so easily have been avoided. Today we have seen his mum and grandma sentenced to his manslaughter and his sister sentenced to allowing or causing the death of a vulnerable adult. Jordan was left to just waste away when they should have sought medical advice, when medical attention was so clearly needed. I hope this case sends a message out to all those who've got care and responsibility that the law will take action if you breach that duty of care. Our thoughts are with Jordan's father and wider family, and I hope they can seek some comfort in the sentence that's been given at court today.
It has been truly horrific to learn in court the full extent of the pain and suffering that Jordan went through, and also to discover that Stephen had another son who he and the family knew nothing about. As a family, we feel we have been denied any knowledge of that baby boy's existence. We've also been denied the quality time we should have had with Jordan if those responsible for his death had got the medical care he needed. We feel betrayed by the people we trusted to care for Jordan. Stephen and the family will always remember Jordan having a bubbly and chatty personality. We've had 2 years of hell coming to terms with Jordan's death, and we would like to thank the police and everyone involved who has helped and supported us through this dreadful time. We now want to be left to grieve in peace and to lay Jordan and the baby to rest with the dignity and love they deserve.
So that was Detective Chief Inspector Nicola Breyer, first of all, from West Yorkshire Police, and that was followed up by a clip from Jordan's aunt, Susan Burling. She read a statement outside Leeds Crown Court on behalf of the family. This is what the judge had to say then, Mr Justice Spencer. He was incredibly thorough when he sentenced the women. He explained his decisions in a massive 15-page document he read out on the final day of the court proceedings. And he addressed all three women when he said these comments. It's profoundly disturbing and almost beyond belief that Jordan Burling, a young man of 18, should have been allowed to die in his own home here in Leeds in 2016, in the bosom of his family, through the failure of all three of you to take elementary, humane steps to summon medical assistance for him, when it was obvious that for many days, if not weeks, he was quite literally at death's door. Whatever view he may have expressed himself about not wanting to see a doctor, each of you independently could and should have summoned that help. With proper medical care in hospital, his life could undoubtedly have been saved. Instead, he was condemned to a lingering death. So they're the headline statements from that judge. He read out a 15-page document, incredibly long, but they're the main points that we've picked out there, incredibly strong words. He also then went on to outline aggravating and mitigating factors. And Stephanie, you're in court every single day. Do you want to explain just what they are generally?
So aggravating factors are some things that the judge has to take into consideration before sentencing. So they might be things like previous convictions and especially relevant previous convictions. So let's say someone commits a burglary, it might be relevant if they have committed a burglary before, that would be particularly aggravating. But if they have committed a dissimilar offence, like a sexual offence, because the sexual offence is serious, that might also be aggravating, but because it's not related, they have just different ways to tee these things up. And a mitigating factor is basically something that will lessen the seriousness of a crime. So a mitigating factor might be, for instance, that a homeless person stole food, but he stole food because he's homeless and he's hungry. So that would sort of explain the crime in a way and lessen how serious it is and sort of make it a bit more forgivable as well.
And also, if even simple things like cooperating with the police from minute one, that could be a bit of a mitigating factor as well, can't it?
Yeah, so something like that the defendant pleaded guilty at the earliest opportunity, or maybe not at the earliest opportunity, but at least pleaded guilty at some stage throughout the court proceeding. So sometimes they'll indicate guilty plea at magistrates, or they'll let it go to trial, and so they'll waste everybody's time a bit and they'll plead guilty on the first day of the trial. So they get, it can range from, I think, I'm not sure if these are definitive, but it can often range from between 25% for an early guilty plea to 10% for a late guilty plea. So yeah, they can get that much off their final prison sentence.
So that's what they are generally. In this case specifically then, Nathan, what were the main aggravating factors for the women as a whole, as a group?
Okay, so the judge said, obviously, like we've said, the judge outlined these aggregating factors. Firstly, he said Jordan was entirely dependent on the women for all of his needs in the last 3 months of his life. As we went through in the last episode of the podcast, that's when his health started to deteriorate quite dramatically. He said their gross neglect in failing to summon medical assistance went on for weeks, if not months. The judge also said that their failure to get Jordan help when he needed it most caused him very significant physical suffering. I don't think there's any argument there.
I think that's pretty clear, yeah.
Yeah. Then he spoke to Dawn directly. He said even though both her and her grandmother, and her mother, so Jordan's grandmother, had been convicted of gross negligence manslaughter, her culpability was greater than her mother's. He said that she failed to heed warnings and advice from people who said that she should get help for Jordan, and she actually lied to some people, telling them that she'd taken him to the doctor in the months leading up to his death. He also said, and I quote, "As Jordan's mother, yours was the primary responsibility for looking after him."
So there's plenty in there in terms of aggravating factors. He did consider some mitigating factors again for the trio, the women as a whole. What were they?
Yeah, so for all three, he said, so addressing all three of the women, he said first of all that, you know, especially Dawn and Denise, they were clearly attempting in their own way to care for Jordan. They had to clean him and change him on a daily basis. You know, as we heard in earlier episodes, they went through in detail about these tasks that they had to perform every day. The judge said, "I do not underestimate the physical and emotional effort that must have gone into those relentless and unpleasant tasks. You perform them out of love for Jordan." He also told them that the loss of Jordan and the knowledge that they've caused his death is probably the greatest punishment which they will have to bear. And he also went on to point out that none of them have any previous criminal convictions.
So he then went on to outline the mitigating factors for Dawn more specifically. What did he say to her?
Yeah, so he addressed the women individually, and he obviously started off with Dawn. The judge said he accepted that she, you know, cared for Jordan as best that she could, and he actually said, "You always did your best to be a good mother to him." He then said that her culpability was reduced by the dissociative disorder that Dr. Van Velsen, the consultant psychiatrist, described during the trial at length.
And that was in regards to her sort of perhaps not quite understanding emotional sort of situations?
Yeah, so they said that this is actually like a pathological condition, and it causes her to detach from reality and sort of affects her ability to, you know, adequately respond to difficult situations. She said, you know, this may be explain why, you know, firstly, she didn't tell anyone or do anything about her stillbirth child back in the early 2000s, and then again with Jordan, even though it's quite clear that, you know, he really obviously needed urgent medical attention. And another mitigating factor that the judge took into account was Dawn's long history of depression and other mental health issues that she's had to deal with, all while looking after her children.
He then came on to address Denise, so that's Jordan's grandmother. Steph, what were the mitigating factors in this circumstance?
So the judge accepted that she was in her 70s, her health was beginning to fail her, and that she had to live with the emotional consequences of her troubled relationship with her husband. He also took note of the fact that she had cared for her autistic son, Carl. He was in his 40s and he lived with her at the time of Jordan's death, and she'll now be affected by losing him because she'll be going to prison. Interestingly, her barrister tried to argue that an expert found that she was highly compliant with a low IQ, which was a mitigating factor because it showed that she was unable to go against Jordan's refusal to see a doctor. But the judge rejected those suggestions and said that, having seen her give evidence over 2 days, she was obviously able to tell Jordan needed medical attention.
Finally then, Abigail, what were her mitigating factors? That's Jordan's sister. What was said about her, Nathan?
Yeah, so the judge obviously took into account that Abigail had a young daughter who's now been taken away from her. She's been taken into care. He also said that, you know, she was obviously quite reliant on this close-knit family, and that family unit has now been shattered, to use his term. He also said, and I quote, "Above all, you've lost your brother and you have to live with the knowledge that you could have so easily saved his life," which I think is quite a powerful statement.
So a bit of an insight there into what happens in all court cases, but particularly this one, why those sentences in particular were handed out. And the reason, I guess, we're doing this podcast is because it was such a highly controversial case. It was a very unique case, and the sentences handed out, some people don't believe they're strong enough. Now, it is a very controversial sentences that have been handed out to Dawn, to Denise, and to Abigail. Why is this sort of drummed up so much public opinion, do you think?
I think it's obviously, the judge made reference to it. It's the fact that he suffered. You know, he would obviously have really suffered in the last few months of his life. It wasn't as if he died quickly. You know, the judge called it a lingering death. It was slow. It went on for months and months. And yeah, it's a poor 18-year-old man who suffered, and his family haven't taken action. So I think a lot of the people, and judged by the comments and the feedback we've got, think that the women should have gone to prison for longer, that the punishment should have been more severe in that regard. I mean, whether you agree with that or not, that's totally up to you. But obviously the judge in this case, I think, you know, like we've just said, he took into account a lot of mitigating factors for each of the women. And I think one of the biggest mitigating factors is the fact that they did, you know, they made some effort to care for him. And although it obviously wasn't enough, they actually did, you know, go through these really unpleasant tasks of cleaning and changing him. He's obviously taken that into account, you know, and like we said, he accepted that they loved Jordan, especially, well, Denise and Dawn, you know, he accepted that they loved him and he was a part of their family. And that, I think another thing as well is that, you know, prison isn't the only punishment here. He made that quite clear. Yeah. They're also going to have to live with it, the knowledge of knowing that they caused his death for the rest of their lives. And so it's not just putting them behind bars is the only thing that will punish them here, which is obviously quite interesting.
And I guess the main reason we're doing this podcast is because of the massive public interest. Stephanie, you're in court every single day. Now, this is so graphic. It's unlike pretty much every other court case that you're involved in.
Yeah, it's basically a real-life horror story. I think one of the things that drew people to it the most was questioning how this could happen, and also why an 18-year-old needed to be taken care of. But as we've outlined, it's possible that Jordan had some sort of problems of his own that we weren't able to hear about because of his death. and the lack of social services in his life and things like that, and also that there were a lot of mitigating factors, which is what this podcast really wants to shed light on, and, you know, answer some of those questions. I think people are always, the public are always very quick to jump to ask, like, demanding more severe sentences and saying this person should be locked up for life, throw away the key, hang them, and, you know, just getting quite violent sometimes with some of their suggestions about what should happen. But
there is a reason why the judge has done it.
Exactly.
In every single case, isn't there? And Nathan, you've stumbled across and where we got these quotes from as well. You can find out those reasons online.
Yeah, so obviously today we've run through the judge's ruling, but like I said, it's a 15-page document. He's incredibly thorough. He goes into, you know, all the details, and you can actually find it online, so we will tweet out a link to the judgment so you can read it in full. And, you know, I think it's very clear the judge took everything into account, and, you know, whether he accepted these suggestions or dismissed them, you know, he left no stone unturned. See ya.
Well, now seems like a good time to come on to the social media questions, and thanks ever so much for getting in touch. We'll come to Michael Carr first. He said, people have been sentenced for longer for doing this despicable act to an animal, so why does the sentence not reflect the crime? He was mistreated for many years by the people he thought who loved him.
It would be a good point, but I think some of the facts are a bit confused there. Animal cruelty can actually carry penalties of anywhere from a low-level community order to a six-month prison sentence. The Environment Secretary Michael Gove is trying to get that raised to 5 years at the minute, but I don't think that's actually been put in place just yet. And there, at the minute, there are no guidelines for, or at least at the time of the Cranston's main sentence, there were no guidelines for manslaughter. But actually, in the past couple of days, the Sentencing Council has released new guidelines. So according to the Telegraph, judges are now in cases of manslaughter by gross negligence, they can now consider life sentences with a minimum of up to 18 years. So had this case actually come before the court, these new guidelines will come into effect in November. So had the Cranstons and Abigail Burling came to court in November, they could have been facing much more serious sentences.
Michael, thanks for getting in touch. I hope that's answered your question. Ariane's also got in touch. He said, did the family show any remorse?
During the days that I was in court when Dawn gave evidence, she definitely showed signs of emotion. There were points where she cried. She was clearly quite distressed. You know, she was struggling with some of the answers. She found it incredibly difficult, and she was clearly very upset when she had to recount these, you know, all the details of Jordan's deterioration, and when she was pressed on why she didn't do more, you know, she said more than once, I didn't want him to die, you know, which, so she clearly felt something. Denise, again, she was, you know, physically moved when she was given evidence in the stand. She was quite upset. Abigail didn't actually give any evidence in court, so we didn't see much. However, you know, when they were outside court, when they were waiting, because obviously there is a lot of waiting during trials and things like that, they didn't seem overly upset. You know, they just seemed quite calm, and but obviously I don't know how much you can read into that. During the sentencing as well, I didn't actually look over that often to see how moved they were, but I did speak to some other journalists who were in court at the time, and they said they didn't show you know, they didn't show any clear signs of emotion while they were being sentenced for this crime. Maybe it's because they're expecting it. Maybe they just didn't choose to show it. I don't know. But yeah, definitely during the trial, there were signs that they maybe regretted what they did. They were upset about it. Definitely. And I think, you know, it's also important to say that when their prison sentence is over, it doesn't necessarily mean that they'll have to stop, you know, living with the consequences. I know we've mentioned in an earlier podcast that Abigail's actually tried to move back to the family home during the trial, and people living near the house, neighbours, they said that they forced her out. They don't want her living there. You know, this is a huge case that's been covered by, obviously we covered it in a lot in the nationals, people across the country have read about it, and I think it's, you know, they will probably not be able to move back to Leeds and live a normal life, which has to be said. There's so many people who know about this case, and obviously have very strong feelings about it. So you know, they might have to move, you know, they might have to start new lives. So yeah, that's something else we should take into account.
So the sentences have been handed out, the three women have been jailed, but the story isn't over yet. We've covered this story extensively over at Leeds Live, and our reporter Susie Beaver, she's done an article where she spoke to Dr. Bernard Gallagher. He's from the University of Huddersfield, and he is a child protection expert. He says that the authorities here in Leeds had no legal obligation actually to check on Jordan Burling. So Leeds City Council has come in for a lot of criticism in regards to this incident, but the council didn't have to check on his vulnerability. However, he did say that inspectors should be going into homes to check on children taken out of school, as was the case with Jordan. And he also says that checks on the family home would have no doubt saved Jordan's life. So there is work to be done there from Leeds City Council. And we actually heard a statement from James Roger. Now, he's the Safer Leeds Executive Chairman. He read out a joint statement on behalf of the Safer Leeds Executive, the Leeds Safeguarding Children Partnership and the Leeds Safeguarding Adults Board. Here's what he had to say.
Although today's verdict can in no way compensate for the loss of Jordan's life and the tragic abuse and neglect he suffered in the months leading up to his death, it is right that the individuals responsible for causing his distress and eventual death be brought to justice. The details which have been emerging in court over the past few weeks of the suffering caused to Jordan by his mother and grandmother and allowed to happen by his sister have made for very difficult hearing. And it is right that those responsible for this crime have been held accountable. When we became aware of Jordan's shocking death, we commissioned a full independent joint review, which is currently underway to identify and examine any lessons that need to be learned to try and ensure this cannot happen again in the future. We will therefore not be able to comment further until we have the outcome of that review. Thank you.
So that was James Roger. Now, he's the chairman of the Safer Leeds Executive, and as he says there, there's a full independent and joint review being carried out at the moment, which means we can't really divulge too much, we can't really say too much at this stage, can we, Nathan?
Yeah, obviously it's going to be really interesting to see what they come up with and what the findings of this review are. We don't want to say too much at the moment. You know, it's obviously going to take, it's expected to take quite a few months for them to piece together what exactly happened, and when they do release their findings, we'll obviously bring you all of those on Leeds Live. For people who may not remember, Jordan came into contact with social services when he was a child. You know, there was concerns raised when he was at school about, you know, the state of his health and things like he had black teeth and he wasn't potty trained and things like that, and so they did come into contact with him obviously when he was taken out of Farnley Park High School after just two terms there and homeschooled. We heard during the trial that he became increasingly anonymous. So this is, you know, there's a lot to look into from the council's perspective and the people involved. And like we said, we're just going to have to wait and see.
So there you have it, one of the most shocking court cases heard in Leeds for a number of years. Jordan's death, where he was left to quite literally waste away by his own family members, has raised a number of question marks, but we hope we've been able to answer some of them over the course of the last three episodes. If this is something you want us to do more of, please do let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes or drop us a tweet. We're at Leeds Live News. You can also send an email over to us on leeds.live@reachplc.com. Thanks for listening.